Welcome, everybody, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hankst, AFC North lead writer at Bleacher Report and Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. I'm joined this week, like every week, by my co-host, Brian.
Hi, Andrea. How's it going?
It's going. It's a little bit warmer here in Chicago. Temperatures are climbing.
Warmer than what?
Warmer than it was when it was 16 below a couple of days ago.
Fair enough.
It's going to be even warmer tomorrow. It's going to rain.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's amazing. Rain. So, we are headed into the divisional round week of the NFL playoffs. My Super Bowl, AFC Super Bowl pick of the Cincinnati Bengals, they are eliminated. Which means that...
Yeah, that was my one wrong pick last week, was that game.
Yeah, I also got another one wrong.
Didn't expect that. I mean, the Chargers, you know, you got to give them credit. They played really well, and they got a thing going on. But I certainly didn't expect the Bengals to play that poorly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the standing fear, though, that bad Andy and a bad offensive game plan could rear their ugly heads.
And the defense didn't play that great a game either.
By the end of the game, they were just on the field too long. By the end of the game, they played pretty well till probably the fourth quarter, I'd say.
It didn't
go the Bengals' way. You know, obviously that raises all kinds of questions about Andy Dalton's long-term future in Cincinnati. But today, Thursday, something kind of fortuitous, I think, both for the Bengals' offense and for Dalton's future. Offensive coordinator Jay Gruden was hired for the Washington head coaching vacancy. So, you know, the guy who called 51 pass plays for Dalton in the loss to the Chargers is now off the team, moving on to be a head coach. I tweeted when the announcement came out this morning, and I think it's a sentiment shared by many other people. Gruden's probably going to be the latest coach to go two and done in Washington. I just don't see it as a smart hire. It really smacks of, oh, his last name is Gruden.
Yeah.
Because he kind of has in my opinion, has no business being a head coach right now. You know, maybe he'll prove us wrong. But, you know, the fact that, you know, after the loss, you know, it came out that Bengals owner Mike Brown actually wanted to draft Colin Kaepernick with the pick that they used on Andy Dalton in 2011, and that he was vetoed by Gruden, who wanted someone like Dalton who better fit his system. So now he's going to Washington to work with RG3, and I could only ostensibly assume that the hire also has something to do with, you know, management wanting RG3 to, you know, develop his skills as a pocket passer, not rely on the zone read and read option and all that kind of stuff as much in order to lengthen his career, keep him a little safer out there.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how that's going to work out.
Now, I'm curious to see how that's going to work out as well. But the Bengals, in their infinite wisdom, and this is not sarcasm, it's true, they took running backs coach Hugh Jackson and promoted him to offensive coordinator. They made that official this afternoon. I think that's excellent news. It's great news for Andy Dalton. The pressure's not going to be on him so much. There's no way he's going to be asked to throw 50 times a game, especially, you know, I was looking at the numbers and Gruden, you know, 15 games in Andy Dalton's career did Dalton throw 40 or more times. And those weren't all games where they were playing from behind. They didn't all end up in losses or anything like that. It's just Gruden had the tendency to get the run game to disappear a little bit. And, you know, if you look back to Hugh's tenure with the Oakland Raiders, both as offensive coordinator and head coach, you know, we're pretty much assured that's not going to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
He did run top 10 offense out there in yards and, you know, it's one of the top rushing offenses. So it should be interesting to see what he cooks up for Dalton, plus Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and Giovanni Bernard. It should actually be good. Also, he'll be a guy who will yell at Andy Dalton. Gruden is not that kind of guy. He's very buddy-buddy with his quarterbacks, which, again, is probably something else that figured into Dan Snyder's decision to hire Gruden, considering how much he loves his star quarterback, RG3.
And how...
How he likes to coddle him.
Well, I was going to say, and how RG3 and Shanahan weren't necessarily buddy-buddy. So,
no.
Yeah, it's a departure from that, for sure.
Mike Zimmer, the Bengals defensive coordinator, is still getting head coach interest. the Vikings are into him. The Tennessee Titans, I believe, are also into him.
Right.
I'd be curious to see what ends up with that, how that situation ends up. You know, obviously, best case scenario for the Bengals is the promotion of Hugh Jackson to offensive coordinator and Mike Zimmer opting to stay in Cincinnati should he receive an offer from Tennessee or Minnesota. You know, there are a lot of good other guys on the defensive coaching staff for the Bengals. Of course, Zimmer, if he leaves, could take those guys with him.
Right.
So, you know, right now, we'll see what's going to go on with the Bengals. Obviously, the defense is one of their strengths, but it also might be a defense that can run pretty well, even with a new coach, considering Zimmer's spent since 2008 building this
right.
thing up. So,
well, and there's enough talent and depth on the defense that it's, you know, if someone else could, you know, that as long as they knew what they were doing, could come in and do well with that group, certainly. It's funny, though, I was reading some things on Twitter today and saw some people talking about Zimmer and how, he's still one of the best head coaching type guys out there that doesn't have a head coach job. And a big reason for that is just his direct nature.
Yeah, he doesn't interview well. He's very
he's too straightforward, right?
Yeah.
I would actually really like that. You know what I mean?
And some teams would. I think you know, you look at a team maybe like the Pittsburgh Steelers, for example, would
right.
be interested in somebody with that kind of demeanor. But a lot of teams aren't. I think that GMs mm-hmm. and owners both. For this being such a big man sport and whatever, there's a lot of fragile egos involved in the world of the NFL, and it's kind of a testament to that why Zimmer
right.
still is yet to be a head coach. But these openings are still available, so we'll see what happens. I think the other thing of note that interests me about what's going on in Washington is that they're keeping Jim Haslett as
yeah.
a defensive coordinator, which to me is just shocking because the defense was atrocious last year. I mean, they dealt with some injuries and whatnot, but, they're pretty hamstrung with the cap restriction. They were still dealing with a cap penalty last year. And then, there's some injuries, but obviously the RG3 trade, they're down. They're still down some picks for that. So,
maybe they just are trying to, keep the continuity on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like that's a position that should be also up for grabs in Washington. But hey,
yeah, potentially.
And that could end up being Jay Gruden's undoing as well. So we'll see where that goes. The Cleveland Browns, they're still looking for their head coach. It seemed to be a lock that they would be getting Josh McDaniels, the New England Patriots offensive coordinator. Me, myself, everybody, and their mother. Has basically, had basically resigned themselves to that depressing, I'll say, fate for the Cleveland Browns. But McDaniels apparently withdrew his name from consideration. The Browns spun it as though McDaniels wasn't assured that he was the man when they interviewed him on Saturday, and so he pulled his name out of consideration. But it looks more likely that he just is uneasy about the situation there, the amount of power that Joe Banner has, the CEO, the possibility that, this would be his second head coaching gig, and should it fail in a year or two or 3 years' time, that might be his last shot at ever being a head coach.
Right.
There was some minor discussion that potentially he could succeed Bill Belichick someday, should he stick around in New England. I think it's a win-win, though, for the Browns and for McDaniels to not take that job. But then some interesting developments came out of that, namely that the Browns are going to be interviewing Chargers offensive coordinator Ken Whisenhunt.
So they're going after Wiz, too.
Which fascinates me because at the start of the coaching search, Banner and owner Jimmy Haslam both made it clear that they would not be re-interviewing anybody that they interviewed last year. For the head coaching vacancy, Whisenhunt is one of those guys they interviewed last year, and now they've kind of backed off. So the question is this Jimmy Haslam kind of wresting some power back from Joe Banner and overriding him and saying, no, we're bringing in Whisenhunt? Or is it the Browns now looking at a dearth of options for this vacancy, and they have to revisit people they talked to last year?
To me, it just sounds like Plan B.
It sounds like Plan D to me, but
well, you know what I mean.
You know, they went out. They went after a couple of other guys. They had some nascent interest in Auburn head coach Gus Malzahn. Malzahn does not want to leave. James Franklin from Vanderbilt. He looks like he's on the brink of potentially getting the Penn State head coaching job. You know, and then there are a lot of guys who said they flat out were not interested. And then there's the fact that, you know, the guys they've otherwise interviewed have all been defensive guys, and they're looking for an offensive coach. So, you know, all these things combined, it makes sense that they would give Wisenhunt, you know, another interview. I think, you know, I mean, he's interviewed for the Detroit Lions job as well. I think that one would be a better situation for Wisenhunt and for any coach, because there's just so much more stability overall in the organization. They're stable at quarterback. You've got Calvin Johnson. You've got, you know, some stability at GM and leadership positions there that,
patience and ownership is one thing that the Lions actually have going in their favor, but that's sometimes can not work out in their favor as well.
Right, but, you know, yeah, and it's not like Wisenhunt hasn't already had a stint as head coach and has understood problems, you know, the problems of and the trials and tribulations of being the coach, head coach of a poor performing team. But at the same time, you know, I just don't think that it would be a smart situation for Wisenhunt. I think it's smart that he would take the interview. I think it's smart for the Browns to want to interview him, but it's such a risky job at this point. I mean, I don't think like that the Browns are setting out to get a head coach they're going to fire again after one season. But the fact that they've shown willingness to do so, you know, doesn't really make the job all that extraordinarily attractive.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to see how it could look that good, you know. Given the patience they've shown, or lack thereof.
Because what's surprising to me, too, is, you know, the Browns' defense collapsed so much, and yet Ray Horton, for now, is still there. And you know, they talk about, you know, failing to evolve and progress and improve over the course of the season. You know, basically this whole thing just looks like they pulled the trigger on firing Chudzinski because they thought they had Josh McDaniels locked down, and then they didn't, and now they're kind of in a between a rock and a hard place. They're, you know, one name to keep an eye on for this opening and for the Dolphins, Miami Dolphins offensive coordinator opening is Ben McAdoo, the Green Bay Packers quarterbacks coach. If you'll recall back in the day, Joe Banner, when he was working in a similar capacity with the Philadelphia Eagles, hired a relatively obscure Green Bay Packers quarterback coach named Andy Reid to be the Eagles' new head coach.
Right.
And it went swimmingly.
Yeah, but, you could say that.
But what's shocking to me is this Browns regime's, like, they're grasping at straws. They're interested in the Belichick coaching tree in order to find a new Bill Belichick, or they want to invent the new Andy Reid. They're not trying to, you know, tread new ground here. So we'll see what happens with the front office, see if their power gets curtailed a little bit by Haslam, who's an extremely hands-on owner. Another failed season, and, you know, this is Haslam's investment. He might just clean house again, start over. We'll have to see what happens here, but it's just not looking good. It's looking bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said. I mean, I think there's potential that, you know, they were planning on going with McDaniels, and then they interviewed him, and, you know, maybe they weren't necessarily as sold at that point, and they, you know, that was the plan, and then maybe they changed their mind, or maybe it's like you said, he just decided he didn't want to do it. But now, yeah, it definitely seemed like that was, it was, you had the suspicion last week, and I think rightfully so, and along with a lot of people, that, you know, that was a done deal, and then it didn't happen. So then, for whatever reason, and now they're, you know, trying to figure out what they wanted. That honestly, that tells me that unless you're correct that they wanted him, and maybe they even offered him the job, and he was just like, you know what, I'm not doing it. If it got that far, then, you know, then what I'm about to say isn't the case at all. But I also think that maybe they weren't sold on Chud, and maybe they gave him that year, but then they kind of recognized, maybe it was early on they recognized that he wasn't the right guy, and
right.
and they but they were kind of in bed with him at that point. At least give him a year and let's see what happens. And then he went on the losing streak. So then it's just like, okay, we got to pull this trigger now. And so or maybe that at least was part of a factor at least. And so now they're again, they had the plan of going McDaniels. That's not worked out at this point. So now they're kind of scrambling and trying to figure out which way to go with it. But, I mean, it's like you said, it could end up being a good thing for the Browns if they, you know, pick a Ben McAdoo or whoever else on some other team and somebody that, you know, is somewhat obscure and maybe it turns out to be really good, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the best situation for Josh McDaniels. I think him being the Patriots offensive coordinator assures him a level of career stability that being the head coach of the Cleveland Browns does not offer. I am firmly True. Of the mind that Josh McDaniels was 100% in the Browns' plans. They wanted him last year and he decided not to even interview. I firmly also believe that he changed his mind. I think that he decided not to uproot his family. I think that he didn't feel like he should uproot his family. He's got four young children in order to go to Cleveland only to be there a year or two, lose his job potentially, and then never have the opportunity to head coach anywhere ever again. And I think that's really real fear for him. Mm-hmm. He's still a young guy. You know, he's not as young as he was. He was 33 when he took over the Denver Broncos job. But he's still pretty young, obviously. You know, a head coaching job will be his whenever he wants it, practically, you know, anywhere with a vacancy within the next, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, whenever he wants it, basically.
He'll be a name.
He'll always be a name.
Every year
until unless he fails as head coach
right.
again.
Right.
So he didn't have to take this Browns job. And there's no career stability. And there's no career stability in coaching in the NFL to begin with. But now the Browns have just sort of painted themselves into a corner. First hiring Chudzinski and then firing Chudzinski. And, you know, I think this process is going to be taking a little bit longer than the Browns had hoped.
Yeah, and that's never a good thing because
they're going to run out of candidates.
Not just that. It's also because there's still teams playing, and you know,
yeah, there's still the Broncos offensive coordinator team.
He'll be you know taking interviews and or you know
after they're done.
Right, exactly. So you could still end up with a decent coach, but the problem is you end up behind the eight ball because if you get a guy like. Last week, like the Bucks did, you know, Lovey's in place and already, you know, getting settled.
Right, and they
and
already
doing
have Leslie Frazier as their defensive
plans.
Coordinator, and they
exactly.
have their offensive coordinator, and so this new head coach is going to come into Cleveland and then have to evaluate Norv Turner and Ray Horton, and then the Browns might have to make more hires on the coaching staff, and then the pool again is still thin.
Right, and so that's the thing is like this time of year is it's somewhat crucial for the evaluation for the draft because. You know, every day counts, you know, and, you know, like I said, Lovey's been in place. He's already, you know, looking at what they have and looking at what they need to get and evaluating all that already rather than like 3 weeks from now, someone, you know, just taking a job and at that point, then they got to figure out who they're dealing with in the first place.
Right.
And then you're already like up on the combine, and you've maybe even missed part of, you know, I mean, I'm sure they all go to the Senior Bowl and do that
stuff.
Oh, yeah,
Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi will be doing all that.
Right. I mean, they're doing that all at the same time. But, it definitely helps the coaches to be involved.
Sure,
so.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, there's one thing that Browns fans and beat writers were you know, discussing this week once McDaniels, you know, withdrew from consideration. And that was, hey, it took the Steelers till January 23rd to hire Mike Tomlin.
Right.
So it can be fine. It can be all right.
There's success stories.
There are success stories.
It just depends on who it is and, you know, what they got. So.
Yeah, and even if McDaniels was interested in the job, they wouldn't be able to hire him until the Patriots are out of the playoffs anyway. So,
right.
You know, there's that also to keep in mind. And that, you know, so that could potentially have run until early February anyway, you know,
right.
had McDaniels not withdrawn from consideration.
Potentially, yeah.
So the Dolphins mess is still ongoing. They on Monday they got rid of offensive coordinator Mike Sherman. General manager Jeff Ireland is also done. There's a lot coming out about power struggles in the organization between ownership, and then the vice president of personnel or whatever, Donna Ponte, and how they kind of ganged up to get, you know, Ireland out of power. So now they need an offensive coordinator. They need a GM. You know, I guess the head coach is safe, but, you know, the new GM is...
It's tough to say, you know, who they hire as GM and what they're going to want to do. I hear you. It's the fact that Philbin is still there and still has his job. It definitely seems like, you know, ownership wants him around, or is there a president there, or was Ireland the top GM, the top guy? It's
Donna Ponte's the top person.
Oh, Abba
She's
Ponte.
The top.
Okay. Sorry.
She's at the top. She got a promotion, and last year Jeff Ireland recommended to ownership that she be fired, and instead she got promoted and her salary doubled, and she no longer answered to Jeff Ireland.
Right. Okay.
it's a cluster down there, and the power, like the politics and the power struggles there, are going to be awful for any new GM, new offensive coordinator, new coaches, everybody to deal with.
Yeah. Well, it's funny though, because there was lots of opinion going around. Not that I'm, you know, involved or know that much about it, but I saw lots of people for the past several years talking about Ireland and saying, you know, the guy's just makes crazy decisions all
yeah.
the time. It's questionable, you know, and. So,
but it seems like all the decision making going on with the Dolphins has been questionable, you know, and Ireland is an example of it.
It's hard to say exactly where it stems from. I mean, I guess it was prior to him too, but
ownership.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
But so they're bringing in Ben McAdoo for the OC vacancy. They're also looking at Eagles quarterback coach Bill Lazor. And Gary Kubiak is also apparently going to get a call from the Dolphins about the offensive coordinator position there.
Okay.
So, you know, we'll see how that goes. You know, we've got a couple other notable names. Don't have jobs right now. Jim Schwartz. I haven't even read about anybody interviewing Jim Schwartz. So maybe he's this year's Lovie Smith and he spends the year out of football. We'll see.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I kind of just...
He could just end up in Cleveland because of the Belichick stupid coaching tree that they're obsessed with.
he could, or he could end up somewhere else as a DC. It's there's still some vacancies to be filled, so
right, and
some
you know,
DC spots probably left to be filled too.
Yeah, and we got to see what happens with Mike Zimmer. You know,
right.
if he goes on to, you know, Minnesota or Tennessee, then maybe the Bengals will make an overture to Schwartz if they don't promote from within. But yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. Right now with a lot of these coaching searches, it's going to be interesting to see what shakes out. And there are other teams that are still evaluating their personnel. The Steelers, Mike Tomlin is still evaluating his coaching staff. You know, the Ravens made a couple of moves. You know, they're looks like they're keeping Juan Castillo as full-time offensive line coach. He was a running backs coordinator was his exact title last year, but now he's just full-time O-line. They got rid of their running backs coach, who's been with the team since 2008. So, I mean, there's going to be other little moves, I think, that are going to be happening, you know, with assistant coaches and things like that in the next couple of weeks as well. So those are worth keeping an eye on, who the Steelers are. The Steelers are promoting from within for offensive line. His name is Sean. He was running the offensive line basically for the second half of the season when the line got better and the protection got better. So he's just going to be promoted to that job. So that's good.
There hasn't been any decisions made.
Looks like Todd Haley will probably stick around, but there's still questions about Dick LeBeau that he may not opt to stick around. And I think it'll probably be heavily informed by how many of the starters on defense the Steelers part ways with this
right.
offseason. Because it might be better, you know, if you're clearing house on seven, you know, starting veterans, might as well just have a new defensive coordinator too, you know. And LeBeau obviously dictates the terms of his employment, so
right.
there are still things that could happen.
But yeah.
So you know, a lot of moving parts. Coaching searches continue.
The coaching carousel revolves.
I pretty much figure, you know, next Tuesday I have to go to the DMV, so I'm guessing that's probably when the Browns will hire their coach, is when I'm at the DMV. Because that's how it usually works with the Browns and major announcements. I'm usually in the middle of doing something else.
Well, you'll have your phone anyway.
Yeah. I'll at least find out about it and then be like, I have to not. I can't write. I have to write. And then obviously the line will be really long at the DMV and, well, I'll be cursed because Cleveland, I guess. So we are going to take a quick break here. I got to get this cat. I don't know if you have heard. That's Quincy. Say hi to Quincy. Going to move this cat out of the room because he won't shut up. And then we're going to come back and we're going to make our picks for the divisional round of the 2013-2014 NFL playoffs.
Yeah, I'll have to figure out who I'm picking here.
Yeah. We're here at the F-Ball Podcast. We'll be right back. Back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and it's time for us to make our divisional round playoff picks.
Yes.
We start on Saturday, the early game, which is not terribly early. It's 4:35 Eastern.
The earlier game.
The earlier game. New Orleans Saints at Seattle Seahawks. I think we all remember the
right
last
off
time.
The bat.
I think we all remember the last time the Saints went to the Seahawks in the playoffs. It was the birth of Beast Mode. It was a seismic event when the 7-9 Seattle Seahawks upset the New Orleans Saints in the playoffs in 2011, in the 2011 season. I'm picking Seattle. I think that we're going to have a nice Beastie Modi kind of day. The Saints, to their credit, they've been really trying this week to mimic the environment in Seattle. They've pumped in so much crowd noise. They put a Seahawks logo in the center of their practice field to try to get a real Seattle feel. So, do some method acting, if you will. Mm-hmm. I think the Saints, obviously they have this improved defense this year. They've got a good run game that I think that could give Seattle's defense a little bit of trouble. But at some point, Drew Brees is going to have to throw towards where Richard Sherman is. And, he's got he barely gets thrown to, and he has, the most picks in the league right now. It's the most insane thing. that's the sign of a great corner. I mean, if you can barely throw to him, but, half the time he's picking you off. I like Seattle. I think it would be a little bit different in the Dome in New Orleans. But I think that we see a repeat of the insanity of last time. This time it won't be an upset because everybody expects Seattle to win.
Well, yeah, this Seattle team isn't 7-9.
They are not. No, sir.
It's definitely a different.
Oh, and Percy Harvin has confirmed he will be playing.
Okay, Percy Harvin's going to play. So
yes.
That's, I guess, more to consider in making a pick here. This is definitely a different, completely different game than a couple years ago going into it. You got Seattle, who's consistently been probably the best team in the league, or just about among the top couple throughout the season.
I would say consistently they've been the best team in the league.
And I'm saying what people could say, what one might say.
No, you should say what you say. Do you think they're the best team in the league? Say that.
Well, I don't know. they're like I said, they're right there. I don't think it really matters, And then this, the Saints, though, they're doing their thing, and everybody said that they couldn't do it last week, and except me, and I'm sure there was a few other people that are on the Saints too, they proved all those people wrong that they, can do it on the road and play that play a good game and take down that offense. Their defense played pretty well, but they took down that Philly offense and it was a great game to watch.
It was
watch.
A great game. I mean, 2-point win.
Great
game
amazing. To watch. Absolutely. Do I think that, they're going to go up in Seattle and do that? I mean, I think that, they have a lot of this motivation, Seattle's had the bye, New Orleans just has been playing well and kept it rolling last week. You can really feel that they got something going there. But I don't know. I think Seattle's just probably too tough here. The for the, I mean, if you, especially if you look at, you know, the game that, that they played last week in Philly, it was such a tough game. Philly has been playing well, and they you know, they have that offense. Their defense definitely played well the last month or so, Philly's, and you know, the Saints played well against them last week, or pretty well, and were able to, you know, get up and down the field a bit. And but, you know, that's a whole different story out in Seattle. Just, you know, the way that team plays and as physical as they are. And I think that, you know, they're the type of team that can take a bye week and do well with it, and not, you know, rest on their laurels or anything like that.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that Seattle is just too tough to pick against in this situation. As much as I like what the Saints have going on, and I feel like they could go up there and potentially get an upset, like if you just look at it from the Saints' perspective, you know, the way that they really are playing well, and you can see that they're inspired and all that. So I think that maybe they can give them a little bit better game than a lot of people will think, but I think Seattle's going to end up with the win.
All right, next up on Saturday night, the Indianapolis Colts are at the New England Patriots. The Indianapolis Colts have been giant killers this year, as we've talked about pretty much every week. You know, last week they beat the Kansas City Chiefs 45-44. It was well over 1,000 yards of total offense in that game. Second largest playoff comeback in NFL history. Just, you know, it was a very Andrew Luck game.
Incredible game.
443 passing yards.
Incredible.
He had a huge comeback in the second half.
That play where he picked up the fumble and then, like, immediately dove.
Oh, my gosh.
Just outstanding football.
Outstanding
it was just
football.
Great to watch.
You know, not all. I wouldn't say we saw any outstanding defense in that game, which is kind of surprising with the Chiefs' defense, you know, kind of being healthier and giving up 45 points. But the fact that the Colts could go into they hosted, right? Well, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. The fact that the Colts could score 45 points against the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, was very impressive. You know, obviously New England has the experience value. When it comes to playoff experience, I mean, they have a lot of young guys, but when you talk about playoff experience, you're talking Brady and Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going with New England in this game, but if the Colts win this game, then, like, I am on this giant killer stuff forever. I'm on it all the way to the Super Bowl, because that would be extraordinarily impressive. But I think, you know, Bill Belichick, we've discussed this before. He creates a defensive game plan to take out the other team's top offensive weapon, and that's T.Y. Hilton. And I can promise you, he's going to shut down T.Y. Hilton. So it's going to be interesting to see what ways that Andrew Luck and the Colts
that,
can
yeah.
move the ball mm-hmm. without T.Y. Hilton. And that's going to be key, and I don't think that they'll be able to do that. So I'm going with the Patriots.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it's like you said, this Colts team last week. I'll disagree a little bit. I think that there was some good defense played in that game. I know it doesn't sound like it, talking about a 45-44 game. But it was like mainly just that the Chiefs played their good defense in the first half and the Colts played their good defense in the second half.
Cause yeah.
Mathis really got it going in the second half. And those are good. That's the thing is you can call it, super great comeback, or the second greatest, which it was,
in
comeback
terms of
and
points,
all that.
Yes, it was.
but I'm saying, like, from a fan perspective, did they come back, or did the other team, you know, just did they just collapse and lose the game? And you know, a lot of times it's a little bit of both, but you know, you have to hand it to Indy's D for playing a lot better in the second half. It wasn't just that the Chiefs just forgot how to play offense. You
right,
know?
And that defense is very much still a work in progress, so that was very impressive to see.
Right, so, you know, you definitely got to hand it to the Colts. They've done this a lot this year. Just win these games, and you just, you know, you maybe didn't expect them or whatever. I think I did pick the Colts, so, well, yeah, I know I did, because like I said earlier, the Bengals was the only one I missed. So I picked them to win last week, although I wasn't super sold on it either.
And there's reason for that. I mean, they mm-hmm. won by 1 point.
Right, and that's right. And they had to come
had
way
come,
back to do it.
Back,
so
you know, a trillion points to do it.
Can they go to New England? You know, this is the. I mean, a playoff win in New England would be the giant killer of the giant killers for them.
For them, for sure. I mean, the Ravens did it last year, right? So
Yeah, but like the Ravens, you know, the Ravens had played the Patriots several times in a row in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, and lost to them and, you know, and all that. Or beat, they beat them before too, I think. You know what I mean? And the Ravens were one of the, well, no, I guess not as much.
They were the hottest playoff team.
They're the hottest playoff team, but like they had that veteran defense last year. They had, you know, they had been there before. They had gone to several you know, AFC championships over the previous 4 or 5 years. You know, it's a different situation than this Colts team, which is still up and coming after the rebuild from Manning leaving and that
so,
terrible season.
Like I said,
season,
it's still a work in progress, that rebuild.
Yeah, exactly. So it'd be slaying a giant for them. And this is like you said, it's Belichick, it's the Patriots at home, it's Tom Brady. You know, the Colts, while, you know, like I was giving them praise for their defense in the second half, you know, we're talking, you know, Jarrell Freeman is pretty good, and Robert Mathis had a great year. Both those guys are outstanding players, but they got some issues in their secondary, and you know, that's something that, you know, it's not the best thing to take into Foxborough. So, yeah, this one, oh, God, I really can see this one going either way, just because I think that the Patriots should win. But the Colts have shown us time and again this year that at home, on the road, wherever, you know, and that they can get it done against some of the best teams. So Patriots certainly won't be taking them lightly. Not that anybody else did, but I mean, yeah, you're gonna hold a gun to my head here. So I'm gonna take the Patriots.
All
because
right.
Because I don't know.
Okay.
I kind of feel like I have to.
Okay. Coming up next on Sunday, 1:05 p.m. Eastern, is the game I am most interested in this week. That is the San Francisco 49ers at the Carolina Panthers.
Mm.
The Panthers went into San Francisco and beat them earlier this season. It was like 10-9. I think there's going to be more points in this game, but I think the outcome is going to be the same. I think the Panthers, coming off of their bye week, have a lot to prove. Everybody's just talking, you know, there's this Ric Flair controversy. Everybody's talking about how all of a sudden the Niners have gotten inexplicably hot at the right time. You know, they're balling out this, they're looking like they should that. I think they're going to come back down to reality against the Carolina Panthers here. You know, I mean, obviously these two teams are very similar. They've got mobile quarterbacks, they got a good run game, they got a strong defense. You know, I think that Carolina has a bit of the advantage in the secondary. I think that Colin Kaepernick is not a completely well-developed passer yet, whereas I think that Cam Newton really took that next step this year. I think that Carolina has a slight edge in weaponry. They have the edge in location. You know, I think that people are kind of counting them out because everybody's talking about the 49ers and how much fire they have right now, which, you know, is true, and that's fine. But I'm going with the so-called upset, I guess. I'm going with Carolina. I've been on them all year long, and I think I've been right about every Carolina Panthers pick that I've made all year. So I'm sticking with my guys.
Panthers. You're on the Panthers, and I've expected this.
Of course.
Especially as much as
I've been right about the Panthers this year.
Panther backer this year.
Yeah.
I'm really tossed on this one. I mean, everything you're saying.
There are
saying.
So many arguments in favor of the 49ers here, and, too. I don't even want to like diminish that.
And that's
fact.
The thing is, like, and I know I hear a lot of people, just like you were mentioning, I hear lots of people on the Niners, and that's that always scares me when everybody's talking about a team. Oh yeah, it's like last week with the Eagles. Everybody was just like, oh, the Eagles and the Saints can't play on the road, and oh, you know, the Eagles have been playing really well, and the Eagles, and. You know, it
scares
me.
Then you sort of forget. Oh, right.
They're playing
this Rob Ryan defense and
they're
Sean Payton.
Yeah, there's another team there. You
yeah.
know what I mean? And
Drew Brees. You know, you think about it. I mean, this is the first year head coach of Nick Foles. Like, this is actually very impressive what they accomplished
right.
this year.
So in this game, it's, you know, it's this Panther team, and it's you kind of feel like, as well as the Niners have been playing, and maybe their expectations coming in the season after, you know, off their Super Bowl appearance, you know, everybody expected them to be among the league's best, and I think they dipped a little bit earlier in the season, and then they really
yeah,
got it going.
Yeah,
I mean,
with Crabtree's injury, obviously,
sure,
that didn't help.
That certainly didn't help. But they, you know, they played some games that, you know, that people did, you know, didn't quite expect them to lose, or just didn't expect them to play as bad as they did, but they really started playing good football at the end of the season, and then that continued last week up in Green Bay in the crazy cold and all that, and everybody's just all fired up about the Niners now, and it's like, it's almost like you forget, oh yeah, the Panthers were really good this year.
They have a first-round bye. They won out over the Saints and mm-hmm. won that NFC South. Like, that's an accomplishment. They have been playing ridiculous football this year. Consistently ridiculous football.
And I'm finding it hard to bet against that. Not that I'm betting here. To pick against the Panthers in this situation, just because as stout as that defense was, and it's like you said, they're, you know, the Niners, they don't necessarily light it up on offense. They're a strong or a bruising offense for the most part, and it matches with their defensive style. But you know, Carolina's gonna be one of the best defenses they've played all year, and
yeah, as evidenced by them only scoring 9 points in San Francisco earlier this season against this defense.
Exactly. Now, that leads right into the main reason why I want to pick the Niners, and that's that they got beat at home by the Panthers like a month and a half ago.
Right, and Jim Harbaugh is extraordinarily good at motivating his players.
Right, and that's the thing is that, you know, you got a good coach there. It's a revenge situation for them. They knew they were going to be on the road for the, you know, the entirety of the playoffs, unless the Saints pull off the shocker. Under Harbaugh, they've done pretty well on the road. It's not like the road's been much of a problem for them.
No.
Throughout his tenure there, that's another sign of a good coach. And I think I'm gonna stick with my gut and say the Niners. And it's mainly this Harbaugh revenge. I like both of these teams. I think both of these teams have great defenses. I think both of these teams have very interesting and exciting offenses. I think it's an extremely good matchup as far as just how these teams stack up. I guess I'm just going to go with Harbaugh and that revenge and sort of edge here, but I'm certainly not sold on it.
I hope you're wrong, because the one thing that I've wanted, and you've heard me say this for like, what, 2 months now, is I want the Panthers at Seattle in the NFC Championship game. I want to see what these two teams look like up against each other.
Yeah, I want to see that just as much as I want to see Seattle San Francisco 3. I mean, the thing is those three teams, just outstanding defenses,
effective and explosive offenses.
Yeah, potentially explosive.
Well,
that's
Russell Wilson. I mean, he's mobile. He throws explosive footballs, and then they have a good run game, and that's basically. I mean, he's Cam Newton light.
Right, and that's the thing. It's like Kaepernick's this big name, and has been since last year, and Cam's been huge since he won the Heisman.
It's great
Russell
seeing Cam
Wilson
develop,
like,
by the way.
It's hilarious,
so cool.
Because Russell Wilson is probably the best quarterback of the three of them, and he's probably the third on the list of, like, quarterback names, if you will. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'd be happy with either of those matchups. And not to count out the Saints by any stretch, if they were somehow...
Oh, that would be incredible.
If somehow they were to shock the Seahawks this week...
That would be incredible.
That would just make for all kinds of great stories. There would be third rematch for them with Carolina, or having to play another game at Candlestick out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, anything can happen, and it'll be very interesting, obviously.
And Niners.
I got to pick somebody, so I'm going the Niners.
Finally, at 3:40 p.m. Central Time, 4:40 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, the San Diego Superchargers go to Denver to take on the Peyton Manning Denver Broncos. I think we all recall the Thursday night game, that fated Thursday night when San Diego went to Denver and won in surprising and commanding fashion.
Mm-hmm.
San Diego, they handled the Bengals. The Bengals basically handled themselves, though, in the 27-10 win last week in Cincinnati.
Yeah, they made it easy for the Chargers. So.
I'm picking the Denver Broncos, but let me just say that there is this 4-year-long streak going on of these two bizarre stats in the NFL, which point to potentially the Chargers winning the Super Bowl. One is that for the past four seasons running, The team that has beaten or played the Eagles in the Philadelphia Eagles home opener has gone on to go to and win the Super Bowl. And this year, that was the San Diego Chargers. There's also another streak where Washington has, in the past 4 years, played the eventual Super Bowl champion at some point in the regular season. And they also played the San Diego Chargers this year. So, in creepy NFL stats world, the Chargers are going to win the Super Bowl.
Wasn't it that the Washington beat the eventual Super Bowl champion?
I think
that's what it was.
Yes,
and
Washington.
This is like one of the couple wins
right,
that they have on
this season.
Right,
they only won three games this year, and one of them was against San Diego.
Yeah.
And last year, Washington beat the Ravens, and the Ravens were the Philadelphia Eagles' home opening opponent, and the same thing goes for the previous year, and so on. So, with that in mind, if the Chargers do in fact beat Denver this week, which I'm not predicting they will, they're totally going to win the Super Bowl. They're totally going to win the Super Bowl.
And if
that stands, I'm never picking against the stat ever. And if it happens, then once home and away like scheduling comes out and I see who the Eagles' first home opponent is, I'm penciling them in for the Super Bowl. I don't care if it's the Browns. It's happening. Anyway, but I'm picking the Denver Broncos here because Peyton Manning is a guy, you know, he's a quarterback who, you know, has a short memory in the sense that he could bounce back from poor performances, which that wasn't even that poor of a performance. But he hates losing.
Mm-hmm.
And he will get himself in any – he and his offense and his receivers and his running backs, you know they've been working tirelessly through the bye week to just go completely freaking nuts on the Chargers defense. And don't let the 10 points that they gave up –
I know that Peyton has – you know, it's
but
hard
he's texting with his receivers constantly. He's not letting them.
I'm just saying, not letting them rest. I'm just saying it's more than Peyton and his receivers that play the game.
Right.
And I definitely know that Peyton's done that for the entirety of this time.
No, he's not letting his offense rest right now.
Right. He doesn't stop.
He doesn't stop, and he's not going to let them stop.
I'm just saying he can't control, you know, 53 guys.
Right. But but the other thing too is that don't let the 10 points that the Chargers allowed the Bengals last week fool you. Don't let the pressure they were able to get on to Andy Dalton out of kind of nowhere, because he brought it on himself. And the game planning brought it on. Don't let that fool you. San Diego has the 23rd, 25th ranked defense in yards per game allowed. They give up a lot of points. Their defense is still a work in progress. It got a little better now that Melvin Ingram is back in the fold. Yes, but Denver Broncos are not. I don't think that they let the Chargers get by. If they do, though, Chargers are winning the Super Bowl. Because of these stupid stats, these stupid weird stat like coincidences, okay? But I mean, all you can do is really look at it on paper and kind of be like, well, and yes, you know what? Philip Rivers is having a season that rivals Peyton Manning's in terms of efficiency and effectiveness. He's playing extraordinarily good football. You know, he's got the second tight end now, Ladarius Green. He played more snaps than Antonio Gates did last week. You know, obviously he's got Danny Woodhead in the Darren Sproles role. Keenan Allen is, you know, he's my guy for Rookie of the Year. So he's got a lot of weapons at his disposal. The O-line is better than it was, and Denver's pass rush isn't what it was because, you know, we got Von Miller on IR. So there are a lot of openings, I think, for San Diego to take advantage. But, you know, and everybody wants to talk about, you know, Peyton Manning's record in the playoffs and how he's, like, anti-clutch in the playoffs and all this stuff. I'm not into it this year. I'm into the Broncos, and we're just gonna have with the traditional, you know, Peyton versus Brady to go to the Super Bowl matchup coming up next week.
I'll tell you what. I'm nervous about this, but I'm gonna go there.
You're gonna do Chargers. You're gonna go with the weird stats and the tradition.
Here's the thing. It's not even this. I get maybe the stats help push me over the edge.
That's crazy though. It'd be like 5 years in a row.
Yeah, I know. It's nuts. And the thing is, like, any, you know, trends don't, you know, go forever.
It seems more coincidence than anything. But it's a crazy coincidence.
Funny, I see this in like reading betting stuff or whatever. Not that I'm a better or anything. I just follow it. But like, you know, they'll say like so and so is 13-2 in this situation or something like that. And I was like, well, yeah, they still lost two times. That doesn't mean they can't lose a third time, and it'll still look like a good trend, you know?
Right.
You know, the trends are, you know, just things that happen, and it's all in the past. It's not about what happens tomorrow. You can put importance on them as you see fit. Exactly. So it's not necessarily the trends that are making me think this. And really, the thing that scares me the most is the fact that the Chargers just went there and won in a big high-pressure situation and all.
Right.
And, like, you know, but you're thinking will about the Broncos
Peyton Manning
do that?
And bye weeks, aren't you?
No, honestly, I mean, I think some of it is that, like, situations like when the Broncos played the Jaguars, and if you want to talk about the bye week, the Broncos played the Jaguars, and you could tell that, like, Peyton was just struggling to get that team to work with him. And, like, you knew where his head was. You know what I mean?
Oh, of course.
But
you
it
always
just shows that it's
not,
it's more than one man, you know, and he can't control everybody else and where their head is. And I'm not saying that, you know, they're not going to have their heads in the game. This is a huge, this is the biggest situation for them, obviously. But at the same time, like, you know, having the week off, and it's tough to say how guys can react
to that.
Well,
everybody else is prepared and, relative to Peyton. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe there's some guys on the team that he, you know, can't quite text with enough, and maybe they weren't quite there. It's hard to say, you know. I'm not saying I'm expecting complacency out of the Broncos. I'm just saying it's certainly possible. All signs point to the Broncos. They're the better team here, or at least they've shown they were all season. But definitely the Chargers defense is playing better. I'd say that the Chargers defense is probably playing better right now than the Broncos defense is, and the Chargers offense is kind of right there. And I think that's really where I'm leaning with this. And then, like you said, you know, there's all these trends there too that, like, you know, help say, well, yeah, there's trends to back this up too, you know. So I don't know. I felt like I needed to make some bold prediction. I don't think that the Niners beating the me picking the Niners is super bold, because I think that's an extremely close even matchup. But I wanted to make, you know, one big, and this, the thing I don't like about this is probably like a popular upset pick for a lot of people this week, but, for some reason I like it. I don't know.
Peyton Manning was asked earlier this week what he thinks about the Chargers being a hot team right now. And he said, quote, "What's a hot team?"
That's a good point.
So Peyton Manning. All right. So those are our picks for the, divisional round of the, NFL playoffs. Do with them what you will. I don't care.
Don't do anything with them.
Just don't tell me what you do with them. Just do what you want. Just don't tell me about it. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to, you know, do our little reading from our little book and send you on your merry ways. So stay tuned. We'll be right back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
Yes.
We're back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and before we go, as we always do every week, we're going to close with a reading from the Book of Bradshaw. That would be It's Only a Game, the New York Times best-selling memoir written by Terry Bradshaw, Hall of Fame quarterback, formerly of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I just want to, you know, after all these, I want to interject here, and even though this is a best-selling New York Times situation, this book, I just received it. I didn't purchase it.
No, it was just here.
No, I remember distinctly when I got it. It was when I met Terry Bradshaw at, like, a company function thing a few years back. And that was when I was ingratiated with his gigantic hands.
You didn't get him to sign this?
I'm not all about that. I don't need someone's signature. I don't do signatures.
It would have made a perfect gift for your favorite AFC North lead writer.
This was prior to when I knew you.
Yeah, I know. All right. Without further ado, there were times when Chuck Knoll would send in a play. The man was the head coach. He won 4 Super Bowls. He had tremendous responsibility, and he looked really impressive on the sidelines watching the rest of us actually playing the game. So many times I ran the play he sent in, but truthfully, I wasn't what you would call a real fanatic about it. There's a reason that the word feel is almost part of the word field. When you're on the field, you have a feel for the game that you can't possibly get from the sidelines. At times, Chuck would send in a play, and after dutifully considering its merits, I would decide it did not quite fulfill the various and sundry needs of the moment and refrain from executing that specific command. I would share my thoughts in the huddle with my teammates, telling them, "That's a stupid play. He can't see what's going on here. Let's run." In some ways, I was setting up the classic confrontation, Chuck versus everybody else. The result was that we all worked together to prove that we were right. So there you go. Looks like Terry Bradshaw wasn't entirely always too thrilled about Chuck Knoll's play calling.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. I couldn't imagine that there's any quarterback who is 100% thrilled by every call that comes through into the huddle, into the headset.
Yeah.
I mean, hence the Steelers running so much no huddle in the second half of the season, right? So that about wraps it up for the divisional week edition of the F-Ball NFL podcast. Thanks, as always, everybody, for listening. We always appreciate your kind and continued support. Just to refresh your memory, I'm Andrea Hengst. I'm the AFC North lead writer at Bleacher Report. You can find my work there. You just go to bleacherreport.com, search my name. You can search Google search. It'll boom. There it is. Did some work on Gruden. I'm sure that something will come up with Zimmer potentially and the Browns coaching. So, you know, I'm keeping an eye on all the things you're keeping an eye on. And you can find me at Pro Football Focus, covering fantasy football. Now that the season is done, you don't have to pay, I believe, right now for fantasy gold. I'll have two columns at least there a month. So keep an eye on that at profootballfocus.com. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter at @fball_Andrea, F-B-A-L-L. _ Andrea.
Are you sure there's nowhere else that they can find you?
That's about it. Occasionally on the radio.
Right. Well, it's a good point. I knew there was more. And I'm Brian, and I'm located behind the dials of the mixer for this podcast, as well as adjacent to the host.
Adjacent. He's host adjacent.
For this podcast.
Brian is host adjacent.
And otherwise, I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
All right, everybody. Enjoy the four games this weekend. I hope that if your team is still alive, that they can make it through and make your little Super Bowl hearts fill with joy.
I'm partly hoping, but almost expecting this weekend to be just as good as last weekend, which was just phenomenal.
Oh, these four games look amazing. Really quite good. So, and you know, playoff football is clearly the best football, and
hopefully
in many ways,
can live up to
and in many ways, you know, conference championship weekend ends up being a little bit better than the Super Bowl. But regardless, we should have four great games this weekend. So everybody enjoy them, and thanks for listening. And we'll be back next week here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
Later.
Peace.